today is April 25th, 2009. My name is Elizabeth Alexander.
And this is Jamesia King.
And we are sitting here with Ms.
Dorothy Smith.
And we are in New Orleans, and we have the opportunity to hear Ms. Dorothy Smith's stories. So, Ms. Dorothy Smith, could you please tell us when you were born?
I was born May 23rd, 1950, in New Orleans.
New Orleans. What part of New Orleans?
Born at Charity Hospital in New Orleans that's been closed since Katrina. I don't classify New Orleans as home. My mother was from Louisiana and she had come here to have me, but she and my father lived in Mississippi. So I grew up in Macomb, Mississippi, so that's what I consider as home.
Did you all visit New Orleans frequently during your childhood?
Not a great deal, although we had relatives here. My father had sisters and brothers who lived in New Orleans. My mother had two brothers who lived in New Orleans. So periodically we came, but not a great deal. In fact, I had never seen Mardi Gras until I came to Dillard to work in the mid-1980s, although I only live 100 miles from New Orleans. I had never been to Mardi Gras.
Can you tell us about your upbringing in Mississippi?
Oh, I was reared in a neighborhood, a segregated neighborhood. Went to school in that same area, less than a block from where I lived. There was a little school, well, it had been a chicken processing plant. And when they converted it from a chicken processing plant, they made it into a black elementary school that had four grades, first through fourth grade there. All of the instructors were females. So the first 2 years that I went to school, I attended Westbrook Elementary School. That was the name that was assigned to it after it was no longer the chicken processing plant. And today it's still viable, not as a school though, it's now a funeral home.
Have you been back since to visit your elementary school? Or?
Well, I go by the funeral home regularly nowadays. my parents' home is still on that same street. Since Katrina, I've also bought a house in Macomb. So I'm in Macomb almost every weekend. And periodically I'm up on that end. After we left from that school, we went to a larger school, probably a mile and a half away from that place, and it also took the same name of that school. It then became Westbrook Elementary School. It's now a daycare center. So I pass by them. I have not been inside of the last Westbrook in a number of years now, so I don't know what it looks like now.
Did you have any siblings?
I have three brothers, two older brothers, and one younger brother. No sisters.
Mm-hmm. How was that?
Well, I suppose it was fine since I didn't have any. I always wanted a sister, but I wanted an older sister. I didn't want a younger sister. I wanted somebody older. Mm-hmm. And since I could not have that, my next door neighbor became my sister. She had no siblings. And her mother died at a young age, and her father did not live with them. So she stayed with us for a short period of time and went to various places and ended up taking a job, a sleep-in job with whites in New York. Eventually left that and went into the factory area, worked in a number of factories in New York. Got her apartment, et cetera. The first trip I took to New York as an adult, she sponsored. I guess probably 2001, she had severe diabetes, was having a number of health problems. And the person that she had lived with for more than 20 years, who had been taking care of her, suddenly died. So there was nobody to take care of her anymore. So I asked her if she wanted to come to New Orleans and live with me. And she said yes. So I went to New York, packed her up, and brought her to New Orleans to stay with me. Now, she was not with me very long. I got her in December. She was doing dialysis 3 times a week, Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays. So I would get up early in the morning and clean her up, get her out to dialysis before 7. And then I'd go to work at Dillard around noon, a little before. I'd go back, pick her up, and bring her home. The end of January, she went into the hospital and never came back home after that point. She was put in long-term care facility and died the 3rd of May.
So what impact has that had on you?
She was certainly a very good friend, not educated in any real formal sense, did not finish high school, somehow picked up on some skills of how to work and save money, though. Did much better than I did in terms of holding on to our resources. So that certainly was something that has always baffled me, and how well she was able to do that. And throughout my education, she was always a source of inspiration for me. Also a financial source for me when I needed things. She had no problem sending me whatever she thought it was that I, well, all of what I needed and much of what I wanted, she gave to me. And then after I got married and got divorced, my daughter then became her daughter. She started doing the same thing for her that she had done for me, financing whatever it was that she wanted to do. So we had a very good relationship.
You had your big sister after all.
I did.
So you say you were born in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little bit what it was like growing up in the segregated South, or growing up in Mississippi at that time?
Well, to me, life seemed normal. I didn't know anything other than that. We lived in a segregated community. I had virtually no contact with whites. I saw them when we would go to town, when we went to the grocery stores, because they went to their schools, we went to ours. They attended their churches, we attended ours. So we had no real contact during much of that era. Toward the end of my high school years, that they came up with something that they call freedom of choice. And freedom of choice meant that if you wanted to, you could sign a paper at the end of the school year to say that you wanted to take a specific course over at the predominantly white school, or you could go over there full time. Most folks selected to stay where they were. So I didn't have any real contact with whites in a school setting until I went to Jackson State University to college. And still, there were virtually no white students there, but I had white professors there. And I only had one white professor, well, two white professors prior to that. My German teacher when I was in high school was white. I'd gone to Freedom School during one summer in Macomb, and I had a white teacher there also. I saw more white professors when I went to Jackson State, so that was my first real experience with whites as teachers.
Can you tell us about your experience at the Freedom School?
I found Freedom School very exciting, very interesting. For the first time, you had assignments to do, you had readings to do, and nobody was forcing you to do it. You did it if you wanted to do it. If you didn't want to do it, you didn't do it. But I'd heard so much about black people and what black people had done, and I was reading materials that I had not read before that were very interesting and exciting to me. So I probably did more work during that summer than I did during the regular year, because it was something that I was interested in doing. And I was also puzzled. How is it that this young white fellow knows so much about black people that my black teachers have not taught me about. So it was a very interesting summer, and one that opened me up to a whole new arena. And from that point on, I was always very keenly interested in trying to find out more information about black people and how black people fit into this whole puzzle and scheme of things. One of the interesting parts of attending Freedom School was that we did it during the summer, but during the Christmas break, for those students who had attended and wanted to take a trip, they sponsored a trip to go to New York during the Christmas. And the highlight of the trip in New York was that Malcolm X was going to address the group.
Wow.
We had talked about Malcolm X in Freedom School. I'd never heard of Malcolm X before the summer of 64. And he did address us, and that was just terribly exciting to me. Of course, I didn't know Malcolm before then. Malcolm was not my primary interest in wanting to go to New York either. I wanted to go to New York. That's a big city. I wanted to see what the city life was like. But I guess listening to Malcolm also made some things pretty clear in my mind, because I knew about racism and discrimination in Mississippi, but it did not occur to me that people in northern areas were also experiencing some of the same kinds of things because they lived in a community where blacks and whites had more opportunity to intermingle. I didn't think about their issues on the same level that I thought about mine. But in Malcolm's presentation, he was telling us that irrespective of where you were, racism was in all the states. And it was pretty much the same in them. And I'm sitting there saying, but how could this possibly be so? And everybody I saw in New York was moving along very rapidly, engaged in whatever it was they were engaged in. And of course, our life had been a much slower pace. So it was just a very revealing summer for me. In Malcolm X Speaks, he has a chapter in there where he calls an address to the youth of Macomb, Mississippi. And that was our little group that he talked to.
I know you touched on it a little bit, but just looking back, how do you feel now knowing that you've had that opportunity to hear him speak? That's really amazing.
I am very pleased, and some things you just stumble upon. It certainly was nothing that I had planned. And I say to my students all of the time now, take advantage of things when they're out there. And often you do things you have no idea now that it will ever be important or something significant for you. What I go back and question me about now is, I never saw King. And I was in areas where I could have seen him. But I don't know why I never did so. A real opportunity missed. Many of the, when I was at the Freedom House, many of the civil rights people came to the Freedom House. Pete Seeger, folk singer from New York, used to come down, entertain us fairly regularly. Joan Baez used to come and do concerts for us. So we got to meet a lot of people that we would not have had contact with under normal circumstances. And we saw blacks and whites living together in the Freedom Houses. That was new for all of us. We had not seen black people and white people occupying the same facilities. I took a course that summer from Mario Savio, who was a peace activist out at UCLA. He did the Talk Me a Spanish course that summer. So there were a variety of different courses and things that you could engage in during that summer. Some of them were academic in nature. Some of them were, I guess, hobby related, because we had a course in photography. I worked on a little newspaper that summer. So there were a variety of opportunities that were there.
So what were Freedom Schools? What were they for?
Well, they were designed as tutorial programs to bridge our education. I think that probably the underlying means of them was that you got freedom riders coming into the area, and they were interested in trying to get people to go out to register to vote. And that was another prong of how they were interested in doing that. You had people with all kinds of degrees who wanted to share information, and we were there to absorb that information. Sometimes we met in facilities, sometimes we met out in the open. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter where we were. Hot in the summer, but we sat out there on the trees and didn't bother us.
Was there anything about segregation that angered you or made you extremely angry?
Yes, I was always concerned that particularly one of the issues that got to me was that frequently when black maids died in the communities, whites would come and they would bring food, they would bring drinks, they would talk about what a great person that particular woman had been for them. And I would assume that they assisted the family during that time. But we often did not see them anymore after that. And as a youth, I'm thinking, well, why didn't they know that this woman needed some of this stuff before she died? Why couldn't you have paid her better? Why couldn't you have done something that would have made her life better, since you contend that she did all of these things for you? So that aspect was disturbing. I also remember one summer I worked in a little program. There was a particular pair of shoes that I wanted. And I'm not sure of the price of the shoe now. I'm going to say the shoes cost $20. But anyway, I was excited about this job and that I was going to be able to buy this pair of shoes that I wanted. So I eventually got my pay and I went to the store to get these shoes, and the people would never show me the shoes. I pointed the shoes out to them in the window of what I wanted, and they told me those were very expensive shoes, and they bought me three other pairs of shoes that I could look at, but never showed me the pair of shoes that I wanted. So I ended up leaving, going somewhere else, buying a pair of shoes, but never getting that pair that I had my eyes set on.
He said it was too expensive.
Those were very expensive shoes.
Where was this?
In McCombs.
And they just refused to show the feet.
That's right.
Was there anything else you were denied to do or you were unable to do because you were black?
Well, I'm sure there were many things that we did not have an opportunity to do. I don't swim. I don't know how to swim. We had no swimming pools when I was growing up. My brothers just went and found them a creek and learned to swim, but we did not engage in that. And although I certainly could have learned at a later date, I did not. And for me, the older you get, the more frightened you become. I think it was something that would have served me much better when I was young to learn how to do it.
What did your family tell you about being black?
I'm not sure if my parents told me a great deal about being black. They were certainly supportive of what I wanted to do. So I had two older brothers, and the summer that I decided that I wanted to go to Freedom School, I asked my parents if I could go because I also knew that there was a possibility that my father was the only person in our house who worked. Mother was a housewife, never worked outside of the home. She sold seamstress, so she stayed at home, made garments, but did not work outside of the home. And I knew there was a possibility that there would be some repercussions for him if I went to Freedom School. So I asked if I could attend. He said, if you want to go, go. So I did. But many people were fired from their jobs. Homes were bombed. So it was a very tough time. And most people did not make those decisions very lightly. My brothers didn't go. They would question me every evening when I got back, what did we learn, and what did we do, and all those things. But they seemed they didn't have that curiosity and interest that I had. I wanted to be there. I wanted to be in the mix of things and know what was going on.
Well, how did you feel when the Civil Rights Movement began?
I was very excited about the Civil Rights Movement. I thought it provided an opportunity for a real elevation for black people, but also for Americans in general. It just did not make sense, all of the resources that we had invested in something for colors and something for whites, and particularly in the South, when the South was so poor. Why would you have all of these dual facilities that you're operating with? So I thought it was an opportunity for all of us to grow. We still have not gotten where we need to go, so it's still a slow process, but we certainly do see some of the barriers beginning to break down.
Do you think integration has harmed us or helped us?
That's an interesting one. I think integration has provided some positives and some negatives for us. On the negative side, many of the leadership roles in the African American community have been were shattered as integration came into being. Most of the top tier coaching jobs that blacks had, you got whites as the head coach, blacks as the assistant coach. So the same patterns in the schools. You got a white principal, a black assistant principal. So all of those folks that we had in those positions prior to integration, most of those positions were gone. I like to say to my students, and I'm sure it's probably deeper than this, but just on a very simplistic level, the greatest thing I think we learned doing integration was that they're dumb white people. Until that time, I thought all white people were smart, bright, and they had it all together. But we learned that, no, you got a lot of dumb white folks. Look like you got some dumb black folk. And it made them real to us, because up to that point, these folk were perfect, we thought. We had not had any contact with them.
Do could you possibly tell us your other involvements in the movement? We know that you attended the Freedom Schools. Did you protest? Did you participate in sit-ins?
I was very young. Summer I went to Freedom School. I had just finished the 7th grade. I was getting ready to go to the 8th grade. I guess the greatest thing I did was it continued to piqued my curiosity about black people. So for me, it got me to reading more. It put me into contact with people who had interests that were similar to mine. When I went to Jackson State, I joined a reading club, a book club, mm-hmm. where once a month we would get together and we had this list of black writers and books and ideas.